You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Let's get spooky. You found Earth Station Boo, where horror lives, legends linger, and laughs are always waiting. Stay with us. You know you're dying to listen.
And welcome to the Spooky Kooky podcast of Earth Station Boo, where we talk all things horror. Introducing our horror-holic host, we have our kick-ass Karen.
What up, my horror-holics?
I'm your terrifying T. And so today we are going to be talking about the cutest little pink beagle, Courage the Cowardly Dog. So let's get spooky.
Are you a horror-holic? Then take your horror obsession beyond the podcast. Check out Earth Station Boo's merch store for killer designs to let the world know that you live for the scares. You can also join our Discord and hang out with fellow little ghouls, talk monsters, movies, and midnight madness. And if you want to support the show directly, visit our throne to keep the screams and laughs coming. Find everything in our link tree and remember, stay spooky.
Looking for smart, fun conversations about science fiction, fantasy, superheroes, anime, gaming, and all things geek culture? Join me, your host Nathan, on the 42cast, where every episode brings together a new panel of fans to dive deep into the stories, characters, and worlds we love. From classic franchises to hidden gems, the 42cast explores genre fiction with insight, humor, and plenty of passionate debate. Subscribe to the 42cast wherever you get your podcasts and join the conversation.
We're talking about Courage the Cowardly Dog. It started off concept-wise in a little cartoon called Hamilton, and it was a very rough start for that. But then its first ever thing was in Chicken from Outer Space, and so that was actually Oscar nominated. And then a couple years later, we actually get the TV show. So let's dive in. Let's talk about our initial thoughts on this fun little cartoon. How old were you when you first watched it, and where does it sit with you personally when you go looking back at it?
I was in high school. I want to say 11th grade. And I thought it was the cutest little thing ever. I initially didn't think it was a horror cartoon. I always thought it was a cute little mystery cartoon, kind of Scooby-Doo and the Gang. But, it holds a little special place in my heart. I like going back to it every once in a while. My niece has watched it. She's like, it's okay.
Okay.
But yeah, it's my little go-to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was in middle school or high school when I first started watching it. But I mean, it was released in the late 90s. So I would have been late middle school, early high school for that. I love that little dog. Every time it comes up where I scroll past it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch Courage. Because it was just so delightful in the most creepy, weird way. It's just, I don't know. It brings me back to a simpler time. A happier time. But it gives you all the spooky and kooky while not being too spooky and kooky. I probably wouldn't let my niece watch some of the episodes, but there's a couple of episodes I'm like, she might like it. She might be able to handle that. So what is Courage the Cowardly Dog? Do you want to give those who've never seen it, which y'all stop the episode now, go watch all four seasons. It's only 55 episodes. Then come back and then continue listening. But what is Courage the Cowardly Dog?
It's a cute little quaint niche cartoon about a dog named Courage, who's actually very cowardly, but he's named Courage. He was abandoned as a pup and rescued by Muriel and her husband Eustace Bang. He does everything, to protect his family, even though Eustace hates him.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid dog. You made me look mad. But he loves his family. And whatever time they get into trouble, the things he does for love.
Mm-hmm.
He has to rescue them and protect his home, just like a good boy that he is, even though he's very scared of everything.
Yeah.
And, that pink little dog.
Yep. I think that's a great, great definition of it all. And, people sit there, they're like, oh, he's so cowardly. No, he is courageous in the fact that he faces his fears. And that's what true courage is action in the face of fears. But it's cute every time he screams and hollers. And I'm sorry, Eustace is the villain of the entire series. That grumpy old man hates that dog so much and traumatizes the poor thing. Do you think there's anything specific that made Cartoon Network go, yes, we have to greenlight this, especially since there is some genuinely dark and kind of strange things in the series, you know, that takes place in the middle of nowhere, Kansas?
I mean, I think it's because, you know, who doesn't love a pink, cuddly dog? And I think, you know, most of the artwork,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a go because it doesn't use traditional, just straight artwork. It uses mixed media because
mm-hmm.
sometimes you'll have like, you know, computer generated and sometimes you'll have like 2D, 3D and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And it's very good concept for it. And I would give it, an okay too to see how it goes. Because to me, Courage the Cowardly Dog is like an experiment.
Yeah.
To see what could go right and what could go wrong.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I think the show got greenlit because it was so abstract that they're like, this is going to be animated. It's going to be funny, but it's also going to be scary. And I saw the video of a reenactment of the pitch that was given by the creator, John R. Dilworth, to the network. And it was absolutely insane. Like, he was sitting there juggling while he was talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was absolutely crazy where I'm sitting there going, I've got questions. But okay. Like, if I was an exec, all right. He has piqued my interest. I will see what he can do. Because this sounds like something kids would like. And beyond that, I mean, the show's kind of simplistic in a lot of ways. Like, its formula, you have Nowhere, Kansas, you've got Courage, you got Muriel, you got Eustace. Do you think some of, like, the basic things of the show actually kind of serve to, like, expand on the horror side? And, like, how well do you think kind of, like, the standalone anthology style works for building the dread?
I mean,
because it's like one of those shows where it's like each episode is kind of its own episode, but at the same time, it all connects.
Yeah, because you have reoccurring characters that come and go, you know, depending on the plot that they're using. I mean, it's very simple formula. It works in the simplicity of, you know, how it tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, each episode is like his own little episode, but some characters connect the show together because of where it's set in the middle of nowhere. You feel that isolation because it's the middle of nowhere. And there's actually a place called Nowhere, Kansas,
mm-hmm.
but it's a little bit better than the show. Because you live in the middle of nowhere where there's nothing there, like a straight desert. I'm like, how are you gonna be a farmer in a straight desert? But you know what? Let's go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like such an isolated area, a lot could happen in an isolated area. I mean, mm-hmm. you see like the UFOs come in, you see random gods come in, you have random scammers come in. And so because you're in this whole isolated place, the horror intensifies. And then sometimes they'll go on vacation or do other side quests. Because that's what I think of is side quests.
Yeah.
And, you know,
like Courage goes to the
even
city.
When they, yeah. Even though they're going to these side quests, it's even horrific because you're like, you know, I can understand what happens in nowhere, but you don't know what's going to happen over there.
Mm-hmm.
And because of, like, you know, the closeness and the openness of it, it serves horror in such a good way that you don't really think of it that much.
Yeah.
Because you just think of it as the whole thing as horror, but it's closed and open.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like the fact that, you know, each episode is standalone because you're like, I could catch it right in the middle
mm-hmm.
and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the show, I think, did a great job taking basically a simple, like, a day in the life kind of like thing and like turning it into something so much more and having fun with the fact that they didn't have to stick to something a little more complicated when it comes to like the thing. Like, they could kind of, they didn't have to worry about certain aspects of continuity. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that way they could kind of just kind of go off and do whatever. And it was nice that they had a few different characters that would come in as repeat characters. I think it's kind of like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's basic. A PB&J is basic. Uh-huh. But depending on the type of bread you use, depending on, are you using fancy peanut butter? Or are you just using regular old peanut butter? What type of jelly you're using, you can amplify it quite a bit, but it's still a PB&J. And like, that's what I think of when it comes to courage. You can switch out the breads. You can switch out the different kinds of peanut butter. You can switch out the different kinds of jams / jellies. And it gives you a completely different episode while it's still being the same thing. And I like you kind of pointed out, you know, aliens kind of popping out of nowhere. There's a place in, I think, Arizona. Wish I could remember the name of the town. And it's a funny name. It's like they're in something. I don't remember now. But there was actually a couple who lived out in the middle of, you know, the outskirts of the actual town. They reported all sorts of supernatural things happening. So some of the stuff in the show is actually based off of this like real life couple who is like, oh, we saw aliens. Oh, we had, you know, we spotted this and oh, this happened to us. And I thought that was kind of cool. Now I'm kind of like, what was the name of that city? I'll find the video that I saw it in and then send it to you. Because I thought that was kind of cool. Obviously, like the show has some monsters, but the show rarely explained the monsters. They kind of just like existed, like the eggplant. Like there was really no explanation for those guys. How do you think that lack of information kind of added to the horror? And do you think it kind of helped balance out some of like the comedic side of things with some of the scary things?
It basically helps you, or, you know, it makes you make your imagination run wild, really, because you make your own backstories about some of these creatures and you're like, oh, it could be either very horrific or it could be very funny, depending on how you look at it. And then they use some traditional monsters like, you know, Carmen, who looks like the Loch Ness Monster. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't really know her story until, you know, you watch it. And you're like, oh, maybe she was a former opera singer that got turned into a Loch Ness Monster or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe she kissed the wrong frog or something. And then you have poor baby Bigfoot, you know, that's he's so cute. You know, you're like, so she had she married a Bigfoot and had a baby Bigfoot? What? So because the ambiguity is there, it makes you have more of a conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
And it balances out between, you know, what your brain could, the imagination of your brain. It could be more horrific or it could be more mm-hmm. comedic. Either way, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to add to the story for you.
Kind of like, I mean, look at Quasimodo in that one episode. And he was just like, yeah, he was a funny looking dude, but he was just a dude who was needing some help and, you know, really hated how horrible Eustace was. And, you know, you sit there and go, oh, you know, he's the monster of the episode, but it's like, nah, he was just a dude. And then you also have like the episode of when he went with Eustace to go get burgers. And it's one of those deals of like, were they bad guys? Were they making burgers out of people? Or is it simply just courage's imagination, making everything way more scary and crazy than what it actually is? I mean, especially when you have Eustace who sits there and just does the booga 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 at him all the time. But I think there was a great balance between the dark comedy and the horror. And a lot of it had to do with you didn't have to have this massive deep dive on the villain of the episode. And a lot of the villains were just trying to get by.
Yeah.
They were just trying to do their thing, you know. They weren't necessarily like an actual villain, which I think that kind of helps give some levity to the fact that they are kind of terrifying at the same time. Like, we'll bounce off of the Quasimodo thing. You know, it kind of had some psychological things to it. It had some deep emotional things. How do you think the series worked with that? Especially when it came to like the season finale and like or the series finale, I should say. Do you think like it kind of brought context for the whole series, or,
you know, in the last episode, you know, he Courage believes that he's not perfect,
mm-hmm.
And in a way, the whole show isn't perfect.
Exactly.
Because everyone has their flaws. In the end, you just have to accept the flaw, except for, you know, who you are. And he does, especially with the Quasimodo. He's like, he hated Eustace for, like, you know, making Courage feel worthless and being a bad guy. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to accept who you are. And so this whole story, you know, you see the imperfections of everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
You see the imperfections of Courage, but he strives to be better than himself.
Yeah.
Because he loves his family. He loves his home because, you know, he was an orphan and, you know, got, you know, taken in by this family. But at the end of the day, he has to realize, oh, I don't have to be perfect. I could love myself and be myself.
Yeah.
And I could love myself and still help Muriel out with all the, you know, stuff that she has to go through and rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be this perfect person or dog.
Yeah.
But I can be a good dog. I can be a good boy with all my imperfections.
He's the bestest boy.
He is the bestest boy. And, you know, it gets, you know, really emotional, you know, once you realize, oh, I don't have to be perfect. I can be imperfect and be the best I could be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole show is about imperfections. Every villain was imperfect. And their biggest thing was striving for perfection. But you also have, like, Muriel, who's like, oh, oops, I did this. Silly me. You know, and you could see also how, like, Eustace's greed and his need for perfection was what made him kind of an asshole. Not kind of. He was an asshole. So it's one of those deals of, like, the final episode where Courage is like, oh, I don't have to be like that. It works. It kind of wraps it all up in a neat little bow and all of that. But speaking of Courage, how do you feel Marty Grabstein did as the voice of Courage? I know that, like, he had a lot of dialogue in season one, and then kind of after that, he didn't really have a whole lot of dialogue, but how do you think him as a performer did, and even the rest of the cast, when it comes to acting?
I don't think Courage needs, like, that much dialogue, because you could understand his frustrations, his fear, and his anger with the his feelings through those. And then, you know, every once in a while, he's like, oh, the things you do for love. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's great because it's funny. And you could understand everything through his babbles and his whispers and his sighs. It kind of reminds me of the Wild Thornberrys with the little wild kid that Flea voiced. You understood him. You just did. Okay.
Yep.
It's like Groot in, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy. I am Groot. You understood.
Yep.
It's like you understood, like, with the context of, you know, the situation, you understood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in a way, the performance of Courage, you know, performance of, you know, the voice actor, Marty, it's great because, like I said, you can understand what he's saying without him saying anything.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, it's not to say that there wasn't some, like, really fun, like, little, like, long-term joke or other little jokes. Like, at the beginning of the series, he kind of had, like, a thing where he's like, oh, something's wrong here, or my name is, and then he would, like, go off on a long tangent of a name, like Jose Cazuela Banana Hammock, and then he's like, but it's not. And it's funny, like, that those were funny. And I kind of missed those later on in the series, but he didn't need to have a whole lot of talking. Like, his little bits of, oh, this isn't good, or the things I do for love, you know, those were perfect. They were perfect little moments within there. But he did such a good job with the screaming. But I also really liked a lot of the other voices in there, and how some of the voices gave nods to other, media references or cultural references. Like the one guy, I wish I could remember the name of the villain, but he based his voice off of a British actor who had a very specific speech pattern, It's absolutely hilarious that that's what he did for the computer's voice.
Oh, okay.
That's it. It was the computer's voice. Yeah. But it's like little things like that that I'm like, oh, good job with the voice acting. Like, it's on point that you guys did these voices that had nods to past things. When it comes to a lot of the other voice actors, what were some of your thoughts on them?
Oh, I like the fact that, you know, you have Eustace in Meryl's voice, because you could tell who's happy and bubbly and who's grumpy and doesn't like stuff. And I'm like, you know, when I hear their voices, I'm like, how did you get together? How? What's going on here? Like, you're so happy. How are you with this grumpy old man person? And then you have the other voices that, you know, Muriel's nephew or cousin, Fred, who has this way of speaking and is very slow. And he's also very naughty.
And then you
have others like the quack with his little French accents that, you know, is perfect for, you know, whatever scheme. You know, he's about to scheme and do something every time you hear it. You're like, oh, he's scheming. He's about to do something. And then you have other characters that, you know, lend their voices to make the show so unique.
Yeah, like cats.
Yeah, cats. Oh, poor cats trying to, like, cook Muriel or make some taffy or whatever.
The Cajun Fox.
Then you have Bunny and Rabbit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great. Even the monsters, like, you know, you're like, oh, okay. Like Carmen, she'll sit there and sing. And you're like, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
But I like you. And I'll be your audience. So every voice adds to the story, even if it's a standalone story.
Absolutely.
It adds to the story. It adds to the creepy factor and it adds to the comedy factor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you also know that Muriel and Eustace are the middle names for Chandler Bing and Ross Geller and Friends?
No, I know that.
Now you do. When it comes to the characters, Muriel and Eustace, they do kind of show like the yin and yang. And you kind of talked about that a little bit. But how do you feel like that really kind of like elevates what the show is kind of about? Where it's like, yeah, there's some like really shitty things, but then there's like cuddles and tea. Like, how do you think like they're like great representations of that for the series?
With Eustace, I mean, you know that when you hear his voice, he's going to be grumpy, angry, greedy, selfish. And then, you know, and it shows in the show, like, you know, with different villains. And even if you're not, there's not going to be a villain, you can see it's going to be with Eustace. And then you have that, you know, you have to have that little ray of sunshine that comes through. And that's Muriel. She's that ray of sunshine. And sometimes you'll have that in some of the episodes, even if she's not in the episode, but most of the time she's in the episode because Courage is usually saving her. And in a way, Courage is her reflection because he becomes that ray of sunshine through the darkness that is known as nowhere. Because he's saving everybody. And I don't understand how the whole world is on this little boy's shoulders, little dog's shoulders. Okay? Y'all need to take some of his stress off.
Do you think that Muriel and Eustace are a great representation of reality? Of, like, how, like, your mindset is what shapes?
I mean, yeah. Because in a person, you kind of have that depressive state. Mm-hmm. And then you also have that happy state. Not manic state. Because, you know, mania and happiness are two different things. So in a person, you can have that angry, stupid dog state. And then, in Muriel, you have that, oh, let's have some tea. Vinegar. Vinegar is the secret recipe. I don't understand if vinegar is a secret recipe in anything.
You'd be surprised what recipes have vinegar. And you're like, why would you add vinegar? And they end up being tasty. I will send you a few recipes from my grandmother's cookbook. Both of my grandmothers had these, like, basically, like, the cookbooks that you get at, like, a little old lady church group. They'll all put in, like, little recipes or whatever. Some of the recipes in there, you read the ingredients and you're like, how the fuck is that supposed to make fudge? I don't know. But you make the recipe and it turns out really good and you're like, what sort of witchcraft and wizardry is this? I don't understand. It's one of the reasons why I love following, what is his name? Dylan on TikTok. He has two cookbooks and it's all like old school recipes. And there's quite a few where he's like, don't know how we got what we got from the ingredients used, but it turns out all right.
I know you're talking about, yeah.
Eggy.
I love when he does that.
Moo juice. Floof powder. Floof. Floof. Floof.
And now back for your regularly scheduled program.
I mean, okay, so Courage is technically a kid's show. So obviously there has to be some comedy to it. And if you've been a longtime listener of the podcast, you know that we are firm believers of comedy and horror are two sides of the same coin. So how is it and what is it that makes Courage scary when it technically shouldn't be? Like for you, like when you watch it, like what unnerves you?
I think mostly for me is some of the characters that they use for villains.
Yeah.
Like you have King Ramses, you have the horror director that comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
You have the lady in the mirror or in the lake. And you have like other, and also the situations that poor Muriel and Eustace gets themselves into that makes it technically kind of horrific because you're like, how did you do that? And let me learn from you so I don't, I don't do that. You kind of wish for them to, like, you know, just stay home. Stay home. Because you can't be trusted out there. And then when you realize that the house, you're like, you know what? You need to leave, too. You need to go to outer space. Okay? Because everything that is happening to you. You know what? Get away from each other. How about we separate from each other? How about that? And but no, it still happens, you know? Because you're like, fuck. Everything that happens is happening.
Yeah.
Why is it happening?
Yeah.
What's going on? So, you know, it is technically a kid show, but because of all the scary things that happen, you don't understand how. It makes it horrific because it could happen anytime. But because this is supposed to be like, you know, show, it's going to happen every single episode because, you know, it does. Because it's sporadic. It's a kid show that you have to have. It's not 30 minutes. It's 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So every single 15 minutes, there's like something happens. And you're like, damn it. Muriel, stop doing that. Damn it. Eustace, stop being so mean. Stop being so greedy.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to your family. So it's just the storytelling and also, like I said, the monsters that make it kind of horrific. But then again, they make some sympathetic monsters that you're like, you know what? Set them free. Let them be.
I think what works for me when it comes to the uneasiness is it's the little things, the little details that are mixed throughout. Like the fact that you don't see the pupils of Muriel and Eustace. Like not seeing somebody's pupils puts you on edge. I also like how they use the different animation styles to make it so that way you sit there and go, that's not supposed to be there. And so that puts you on edge. The music, it makes it so you don't know which way is up. And it's all made specifically for the show. And so, like, each of the villains has their own theme song. And I think that's kind of cool. Like, they have that attention to detail. So that way, even though it's only, like, a 15-minute episode, all these little things don't add up to our minds that have, like, a system where it's like, okay, these are all the things that are safe. This show doesn't have any of the things that are supposed to be safe. So it puts you on edge. It makes you go, WTF. So even though, it might not be for some people who are like, oh, it's not that scary. That's not horror. Well, technically, it has all the things that would make it so. It can put you into that space of uneasiness. And that I think is kind of cool that, like, even for kids, they were able to do that. So obviously you have Freaky Fred. You got King Ramses, who gave Eustace way too many chances, in my personal opinion.
Right.
You got the violin girl, who now is actually, like, removed from that episode for, like, in different countries. Like, they've actually removed her from the episode because it, quote unquote, traumatized children too much.
Yeah.
Same. Who would you, like, what would be your, like, top couple of, like, traumatizing moments? Or, like, I don't know, what was, like, the most traumatizing thing for you when it comes to the show? And I understand traumatizing isn't, like, you yourself were like, I've got to go to therapy to talk about this because I've been traumatized. But it's more like a, oh, that's unnerving kind of traumatized. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All I'm going to have to say this is, hello, new friend. My name is Fred. The words you hear are in my head. I said my name is Fred, and I've been very naughty. And I think it's because of how how he speaks is very unnerving. Because you're like, don't talk to me. Don't look, don't even think about me. Look the other way. And the fact that he has a hair fetish.
I mean, he is supposed to be based off of Sweeney Todd.
I know, but still, Sweeney Todd at least killed his people. This man just cuts the mold, okay? And it's very unnerving. So every time I see him, or hear him, my whole body goes that twitch, kind of thing. But I want to also listen to it because it's kind of like a sing-song way, you know? King Ramses, even though he's like the villain, but in the end he kind of wasn't the villain. It kind of shows you how Eustace is truly the villain. I mean, he didn't really have to give Eustace all that many chances.
Yep.
He didn't, but he did. He was like, see, I'm not the villain here.
Mm-hmm.
That man's the villain right there. And I have to say, the episode with, there's so many like traumatizing stuff. Oh no, this one that like creeped me out and it made me not want to sleep. The Sandman episode.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, poor sheep. The sheep are like, we're tired of bullshit. This man can't sleep. We've been doing all this. He's counting, and then he steals Muriel's sleep, and you can see her, you know, slowly, you know, deteriorate because she hasn't slept in days. And, you know, most people don't understand that. Like, if you don't sleep, you start to go crazy. You start to have hallucinations and you could die.
Yep.
I mean, hello, there wasn't actual cases. You know, that's how Freddy Krueger came about. There was actual cases that when, you know, people don't sleep, they die.
Ooh, which reminds me, if you guys go to our TikTok, I actually reposted from the Grumpy Old Gay, who is a micro something science professor. He actually explained some of the scientific reasonings behind all of the guys who died from the thing that Freddy Krueger is based off of. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
I remember it was from a group of refugees that came over.
Yeah, from Southeast Asia.
Yeah, and that's how that whole inspiration for Freddy Krueger came about. But yeah, like you saw that deterioration of pure Muriel, poor Muriel. And then, you know, all he needed was a teddy bear. Well, his teddy bear. So that episode freaked me out because I was like, don't die, Muriel.
Right?
Don't die. Because I was afraid she was going to die.
Because
I knew what sleep deprivation does.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they can't do this in the kids' show, can they? Muriel. Other things I do for love. So those are like and then the directors.
Yep. Obviously based off of Mr. Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm. Those directors. Man. To this day, every time I see their faces, I'm like, nope. Let's not go into that.
That's fair.
So, yeah. So those are like the most traumatizing, not really traumatizing, but the unsettling of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll still watch it because it's Courage the Cowardly Dog. And sometimes when I do rewatches, you tend to find things like, huh, what's going on there?
Like, honestly, like, I completely forgot about the violin girl. But then, like, rewatching it, I was like, yeah, no, Homegirl would definitely be like nightmare fuel, especially if I was like a little kid. Because it's like, the fuck was that? Freaky Fred, for me, yes, his cadence and like the way that he spoke was like unnerving, but it was the way that his eyes were constantly like open and then his creepy ass smile. Like if his smile wasn't there, like I think I wouldn't be as unnerved by some of the scenes as I was. Some of those scenes I was like, stop smiling. Just don't smile. Like, you don't have to smile in this moment. But then again, when he didn't smile, he was fucking terrifying, right?
Oh, yeah. Also, another one was that that dude that lived in scum and dust and sewage.
Oh, yeah.
That character.
That guy was
As someone that used to clean houses for a living, when I saw that, I was like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Like, we're doing rewatches of it. I'm like, oh, God. Why did they do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you think Courage the Cowardly Dog's villains, though, kind of stack up against some of the other horror-adjacent shows of that era, like Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps?
Well, because, you know, Courage the Cowardly Dog, mm-hmm. each episode was 15 minutes long. And so you have to, like, be able to do an impact within 15 minutes. And because these are short stories, it's more impactful for 15 minutes than 30 minutes, you know? Yeah, each story from both of them had their own villains and their own horror storytelling. It's just, for me, Courage did a lot more storytelling in 15 minutes because you got that build up a little bit and then bam, and it's, you get that roll running. You know, you're just running. With the Goosebumps and with Are You Afraid of the Dark, you have that progression of a novella.
Okay.
Because there's a difference between a short story, a novella, and a novel. And if you think of it like this way, a short story mm-hmm. is kind of like a 15-minute episode. Mm-hmm. A novella is kind of like a 30-minute to an hour mm-hmm. show, while a novel is a movie.
Okay.
So you have a lot to compact mm-hmm. and be impactful within 15 minutes. And I think that's where Courage stands for me. Like, if Courage comes on, I will sit here and watch it. If it's on the same time as, you know, as Are You Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps, I'll want to probably watch Courage.
Yeah.
Because I can get more satisfaction within 15 minutes.
Yeah. I think for me, and it's not to say that Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark didn't have great storytelling, because they did, but they definitely, like you said, were more of like a novella where it's a little bit more elongated. It's actually something that, like, you would want to read. I mean, both of them were books. So it's one of those deals if you have, like, this, like, almost book-style writing for these shows versus Courage, which was very much like a short story. Like, here, give it a read. You like it? Cool. You know, it actually, you know, I guess you can kind of compare Goosebumps is to novellas as Courage is to Penny Dreadfuls.
Yeah.
It's not to say that one is better than the other, but I think if you're able to tell such a really well-rounded story, because there's not a lot of, like, plot holes. Like, you don't see people sit there and tear apart the episode and go, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And what about this? When it comes to Courage, everything's kind of, like, nice, neat, and wrapped up. And, like, you don't really have a whole lot of questions at the end of the episode. Unlike Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark? You sit there and you're like, well, wait, what about? And you know, you kind of think back on some of the things. So I think that's what kind of elevates Courage in comparison. And the villains are part of that. They kind of, because they're so bloop, here they go. Here's the problem that they're causing. Here's how you solve it. You're done. I think it kind of makes it easier. Obviously, at the core of the show, you have a dog who is constantly afraid, but he's proving that he's courageous by his actions, and they're always based out of love. How do you think that kind of lands psychologically by it, for, like, the readings of it as, like, more of like a metaphor for, like, child trauma and abandonment and anxiety? Do you find it to be more of like a just a great plot device?
It's more of, you know, it kind of reminds me of, it's a fear of abandonment. And it's basically, he doesn't want to be abandoned again. Even mm-hmm. though he's afraid, he wants to be able to show his love through the acts. Like, all the stuff he does mm-hmm. is through the acts of love. Even though he's afraid, he does it out of love because he's afraid of being abandoned again. He's afraid of being alone. Psychologically, that's traumatizing. Even though he has this, you know, every time something happens, he has this dark outlook of life, but he knows he needs to, like, step up and, you know, do what's right, because he does it out of love. I mean, he loves Muriel and he likes Eustace. And it's hard. It is really hard to watch because for me, I'm like, don't do it, Courage. I know you love them, but sometimes you need to save yourself. Mm-hmm. But in a way, he wants to make sure he has a place to go home to.
Yeah.
I mean, abandoned as a pup, he was rescued by Muriel. So that's his person. So, you know, all the trouble that they get into, all the dangers that they go through, all the things he does for love.
Yeah.
It's this fear of being abandoned and being alone.
I mean, he multiple times throughout the series, it's insinuated that like Muriel saved his life. So he's like, I have to take care of her. She saved me, so therefore I save her. It's like a very much like this like enmeshed type relationship thing. But it works at the same time. Like it works on a psychological level. It helps you kind of like, I mean, I've heard adults who kind of sit there and go, I've kind of worked through some things after watching this show as an adult. Things that I missed as a kid, especially the episode where I think it's Eustace's mom's birthday and like all the psychological stuff that Eustace went through, where like he, like even at one point, like he reverted back to being a little boy in his interactions with her. And you can see that like even with her, like her mom treated her like shit, and then she ended up treating Eustace like shit, and hence the reason why he treats, you know, Courage like shit. And it's this whole not recovering from your own trauma circle. And therefore you repeat it, the cycle, and treat others like shit because of that. So it's interesting. So obviously with the show premiering in 1999, so the turn of the millennium, does Courage fit into the broader horror landscape of that era? And like, what do you think it kind of says about how we maybe underestimate or overestimate the capacity for kids when it comes to horror?
I mean, it fits into that little landscape because, you know, this is the turn of the century. This is like Y2K mm-hmm. and all that jazz, where horror is upon horror upon horror. And then you have like the whole Scream came out in 99, right?
In 96.
96. Mm. What came out in 99? What am I thinking about?
Yes.
Is that The Mummy?
Yes, The Mummy.
Oh, no.
The 1999 cinematic classic, The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz, came out.
So it's like that era you had like, you know, mm-hmm. horror and comedy mixing together. And so it became, you know, part of that little mm-hmm. landscape right there, because Courage is horror and comedy. It's dark comedy mm-hmm. and comedic horror. So it fits. Boom. And, you know, it's hell for that era. It, you know, we tend to underestimate kids and their, you know, capacities of, you know, what they can do and what they can't do. Now it's kind of like, you know, I think it's because we're the era most adults during that time period were like, you know, let's see, I want to say this. I'm part millennial, but also I was raised by a Gen Xer and a baby boomer.
Okay.
My dad was a baby boomer. My mom was a baby boomer. My brother was a Gen Xer.
I was going to say, I thought both of our parents were boomers.
Yeah. But my brother, I was also a latchkey kid. So it is kind of mm-hmm. kind of weird, you know. So we tend to think that kids in the middle of the 2000s are not capable of understanding. But when I go back and talk to like some of the younger kids that are like, you know, 10 years younger than me that were like, you know, raised during the 2000s, I'm like, damn, you had more insight than I thought you did at that age.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not to say that like younger generations don't have the capacity to understand and to experience it in a way that is, how do I say it? To be able to experience it and actually like really enjoy it and get like a full experience of it.
Yeah.
But I think as like people in our age group, I think because our lifestyle was different, the show had a different, had different points for us. So like,
yeah,
because we kind of had like that latchkey, our parents didn't micromanage everything kind of lifestyle. There were aspects of the show that we understood because that's how we grew up, which now,
oh yeah,
like looking at like my niece, there are certain things in the show she won't understand because she would never live that way.
Yeah.
Because parents are a little bit more helicopter-ish. Granted, I mean, like, not that, like, my parents ever had to do the whole, where's your kid? You know, have to, like, you know, respond to the little, it's 10 o'clock at night. Do you know where your child is? Yeah, probably laying in the hallway trying to watch TV show that, like, my parents were like, no, you shouldn't be watching.
Yeah, that was, yeah. And I also think it's, like, the individual kid as well, because I see, like, you know, the stark differences between my nieces. Yeah, one is 12 and one is 8, but they were raised in the same household. One embraces horror with abandonment, just like her aunt. The other one's like, oh, no, that's icky.
I mean, that's me and my brother. Ew. But I also, I'm going to say this. I don't think kids ever actually grow up in the same household. Because they themselves are different, things happen to them differently. So that's a whole philosophical debate on something else. But like, even my brother and I, he's 2.5, almost 3 years younger than me. And we were watching Silence of the Lambs, and it got to a good creepy, scary part. And he snatched the remote, turned it off, and wouldn't let me have the remote back because he got scared. And I was like, that was the best part. What are you doing? Why'd you turn it off? But he was scared to death. Didn't sleep the whole rest of the night. And I think you're right. Like, different kids experience it differently.
It is, and like I said, like my youngest one, we could watch deep sea documentaries. But when it comes to a deep sea horror, she's like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like, we were watching something about the Megalodon. Or we were watching something about sharks. Mm-hmm. And then I put it in the deep blue sea. And she was like, oh no. And then 15 minutes later, she's asleep. She knocked herself out. And I was like, but we were just watching a documentary on what was going on here.
Yeah.
But she decided to opt out. She's like, nope. I was like, that was quick. You didn't get to the good part.
That's fair. Like, I can see it. I can understand it. I mean, this being somebody who was raised by the water, I have like a little bit of respect for it. Like, if that's how I go, that's how I go. But you know, I've been out pretty far out from shore, and it's like, it's a little unnerving when you're like, there are things that could eat me in here.
And that's why I don't go swimming in the ocean, because I don't know how to swim.
I've never not swam.
Well, I almost drowned like 4 times, okay? It's, after that, I was like, you know what? I'll just wade to my waist and that'll be it.
No, I was in the pool at like 3 months old. I've always been in the water. I love swimming. I don't swim near as much as I would like to be honest. Mm. Now, something that I think is kind of cool that this show does, and I think this is something... This is the reason why I think kids should watch the show, is because as an art form, be it with the animation, with even kind of the storytelling and like the culture, like pop culture references, I think it's something that kind of really like impacts knowledge that I think kids and / people should have. Like, there's surrealism in the show. Throughout the show, there's a lot of stuff that you look at and you're like, oh my God, that's totally like a Dolly reference or something like that. There's obviously German expressionism in there. The zombie, Quentin Tarantino reference. Like, there's like all these things. So what it ends up doing is it's giving this like intellectual knowledge kind of base to these kids before they actually experience it. And I feel like that's kind of important. Like, as somebody who... Like, I've watched old movies growing up. Like, I watched Charlie Chaplin, which I know the creator of this is a huge fan of. To me, it's like, I can see the references. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that. That makes sense. But, like, how do you feel about, like, all the different references that were kind of, like, used for this show and how kids are able to be like, oh, I know what surrealism is, you know, surrealism is. Because I watch Curly Cowardly Dog.
This cartoon is very impactful because of how it goes about with its storytelling. Because, like I said, it's a mixed media art form. You have your internet culture, you have your computer culture, you have the arts that are used that, you know, like you said, it looks like Dolly. And, you know, that's what makes this a great show, is because it is showing you and explaining to you what things are. I would have never thought like a computer would talk to me at all. Now, look at us now. We have Gemini. We have ChatGPT. We have Siri.
Claude.
Like, I'm sitting here watching, you know. Yeah, I'm sitting here watching Courage. And I was like, wait a minute. What the hell? This computer's talking to him. And, you know, it breaks down a lot of things. And I believe that, you know, children should watch the show just to get, like, at least a bit of understanding of different art forms and different point of views. Like, I didn't know what a computer would look like on the inside until, you know, I saw Courage. And then, you know, when I was a kid or a teenager, and then my brother took apart a computer, and I was like, hey, wait a minute. I saw that before. You know, and it's very, you know, informative without being informative. It's very educational without being educational. And so it slips in different things without you knowing it until you rewatch it. And I think that's like the best way to explain everything to everybody. Yeah. Slip it in.
That's what she said.
Slip it in.
That's what she said.
Yes, that's what she said. And they're very, you know, they were very smart on how they did it too.
Very, very.
Especially like, you know, that one episode with the Mona Lisa and the Thinking Man. You got to see all the arts and stuff. So I was like, yeah, I remember this episode. And it made me fall in love with the arts again. And it made me want to like go to the museum again just to sit and contemplate. Because each episode almost like does that to you. You kind of like sit there and contemplate. It's like, what was this episode really about?
Yeah.
Let's do a deep dive. And for a show that does that to you, awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and even with like the music that they put in there. Granted, like the majority of the music was specifically written for the show, but they added things like Ode to Joy and like the Carmen episode, and like they used a lot of classical music that like, so when the kids are sitting there and they hear that in the show, they can then turn around and hear it in real life and be like, oh, I know that song. There becomes this, it tears down the barrier between art and the stereotyping of it and giving it more access. Like, granted, like Ode to Joy is, I don't want to say overused, because it's not, but it is. It's a very, everybody and their brother knows that song.
I mean, I had to play it on the violin, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a very well-known song. And so then you go back and you sit there and you see these kids, they know that song, and then they play it on the violin or the flute or the bassoon or the clarinet or whatever instrument they end up picking up. And or they hear it. And you have like the Black violins who took it and they made it their own. They gave it a hip hop R&B kind of twist to it. And it's beautiful to see how art influences art, who that influences art. And that's, I think, the beauty of it all, including like the storytelling for this show. Like, there are things that have referenced Courage of the Cowardly Dog. And I think that's kind of what makes it kind of amazing as a show, and how it's influenced kids and adults, more or less.
Yeah.
If that makes sense at all.
Yeah.
So I know I didn't put this on our like, ooh, we're going to talk about these things list, but there was a thing that they did with Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah.
It was
like a little...
So it was kind of like a, do you guys want us to bring it back? He wants to reprise it.
Oh,
what are your thoughts?
I love the Scooby-Doo episode. I love the Scooby-Doo episode. Like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, they're going to bring back Courage? They're going to bring back Courage? And I was like, oh, they didn't bring back Courage. But if it does, you know, I would sit here and watch Courage the Cowardly Dog all day, every day. Even if, you know, he did more cameos with different shows, like different horror-esque shows. Even if he showed up, like, you know, in Scooby-Doo every once in a while, or Scooby-Doo Gang showed up with him. Or you see a crossover with Scooby-Doo and the Winchester Brothers and, you know, and Courage. I would sit there and watch it. Yeah.
So I enjoy the Scooby-Doo episode.
I'm not going to lie.
I was like, yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I absolutely love the Scooby-Doo episode. But I can also see why some people were like, no, we're not bringing the show back. But it still breaks my heart because I was like, but I love Courage. He's such a sweet little thing.
Yeah.
But now, especially now with some of the voice actors who have passed away, it would make the show, in a sense, kind of weird because it's not going to be the same. But at the same, same time, it's one of those deals of like, it could be like Courage's cousin or something. I want the idea back. I want the concept back. I enjoyed it.
I mean, also you have to think, you know, Muriel and Eustace are very, very old.
Mm-hmm.
And Courage is very young.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to Courage when they die?
Exactly. I mean, there was also at one point a before Courage. So it was supposed to be, I think, like what happened before he got abandoned or something like that. But that never took off. Like, I don't even think they got past like a script. But I know that there was like thoughts of it.
Because I would totally love to be a voice actor of Courage the Cowardly mm-hmm. Dog. And I would love to take my Courage out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, I'll be his new owner. It's like, let's go traveling, Courage. And I'll get into the weird, mm-hmm. weird shit.
And
knowing Karen will get in some weird shit. And knowing Courage is like, oh, God, why?
Well, and what I would love is if, you know, he's off on these adventures and he runs into some of his old villains, like cats, like the ducks,
uh-huh.
like, you know, like the Cajun fox, like, you know, bring back some of those old other characters and have
kick him from outer space
and have them be like, oh, Courage. And like, I want them to be happy to see him and upgrade the computer, make the computer a phone.
Oh, yeah.
And,
right.
You know, the phone be like,
ugh. It's like you again.
It's like,
like, how's my father?
Like, have you?
Let me see my father. Hello, it's Papa.
Like, hello. How have you not figured this all out yet? But it's about that time. So we're going to wrap this up. So our final thoughts on Courage, the Cutie Patootie Cowardly Dog. We also are going to do a rating for it. If you're new here, we do skull ratings, 1 through 5. 1 because they tried, 5 because it's just that fucking awesome. So Karen, what are your final thoughts on Courage, the Cowardly Dog? Do you think it was ahead of its time? And what do you think its lasting legacy is going to be for horror / animation?
Yeah, it's a 5. Like, if you haven't seen it, go see it. Don't hear us talk about it. Go watch for yourself. It was ahead of its time because not that many animation during the time will do a mixed media style. And the stories are very great. And the voice acting is amazing. And some of the episodes are, like, really cute. And, you know, and you just love it for what it is. And you would want Courage as your pet. Because, you know, sometimes you, like, get into, like, weird situations. And you want your pet to come mm-hmm. and save you. Like, I have a pet that loves me, never leaves me alone.
Sammy.
Can't go to the toilet by myself, because every time I try to close the door, I see a paw underneath it, like a toddler. What you doing?
My dog did that all the time to me.
Like, when I have a dog, too, but, like, if I'm petting my dog, here comes Sammy, like, get the fuck away from her. And my dog's a pit lab mix, and he's afraid of Sammy. So I'm like, you know what? Between the two of you, I will be protected. So everyone should want a Courage Cowardly Dog because the things he does for love.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, no, this is definitely a 5. 1, because it's timeless. It truly is timeless. It was ahead of its time. There are so many things that mimic it and the way that they tell stories by using like the different types of animation and everything. But like, this is a show, it is definitely a gateway drug for horror when it comes to introducing kids to it in a slightly safer and more absorbable kind of like way. But it's great. It's absolutely lovely. It's so much fun to watch. It's funny, but it's spooky and kooky. And this is a show that I think a lot of people should watch. and really like really get and understand, because it's just so fantastic. Honestly, when it comes to Courage the Cowardly Dog, I don't think there's anything negative I can say about it. Like, I think overall it is truly a fantastic, fantastic show. But our fellow horrorholics, we want to hear from you. What Courage the Cowardly Dog episode actually traumatized you as a child or as an adult? Because that violin girl still is creepy as fuck. So obviously we would love to hear from you guys. But Karen, where can they find you so they can talk to you?
Find me on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, Threads, TikTok, and Reddit.
All right. I am Spill Tea. You can find me on all the things at Spill Tea Wine Media Mind. It's, you look that up, you'll find me. I'm on all the different platforms. And Earth Station Boo is on like all the different platforms. So don't forget to subscribe, follow, rate, and share. It helps fellow horrorholics find us. We want to hear from you. So go ahead, drop some comments in there, slide into our DMs, email us at earthstationboo@gmail.com. You can find all of our links at our link tree, which is linktr.ee/earthstationboo. Wherever you're listening to this, there should be a link tree. You can click it, find us. But come join a conversation on our Discord, and don't sleep on our merch store. We got some amazing cool stuff in there. And new episodes drop every Tuesday. And we're trying to do movie nights every Sunday at 8 p.m. But as always, thank you so much for taking a trip back to nowhere, Kansas with us. Seriously, we appreciate every listener in the horror game. We are extremely grateful for you guys. Every single like, share, and all that means the world to us. Courage the Cowardly Dog kind of proved that you don't need blood or gore to get under someone's skin, but sometimes all you need is a cute little pink dog, a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, and right shade of purple.
Yes.
So until next time, stay weird, stay spooky, our fellow horrorholics.
That's a wrap for Earth Station Boo. Thanks for listening. Follow, share, and find all our links in our link tree. Until next time, stay spooky.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the Tee Public store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.